Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
If you're paying attention to the headlines, you've heard about ransomware, a computer virus that locks your files until you pay a ransom. But did you know that more and more businesses are under attack? The key to stopping ransomware is protecting yourself before you're attacked. With Carbonite, if your business becomes infected, you can recover clean files from their super secure servers. Best of all, you don't have to remember to upload files. Carbonite does it automatically. Try it free at carbonite.com/podcasts and receive 2 free months if you buy.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Nick Miles, and in the early hours of Friday, the 27th of March, these are our main stories. It's emerged that the United States has become the epicenter of the global coronavirus outbreak. That's according to the Johns Hopkins University. A nationwide 3-week lockdown has begun in South Africa. Russia has grounded all international flights, apart from those bringing Russian nationals home from abroad. Also in this podcast, in the UK, people stepped out of their homes on Thursday evening to clap for those working in Britain's National Health Service during the pandemic. Just before we recorded this podcast, it emerged that the United States has become the epicentre of the global coronavirus outbreak, according to Johns Hopkins University Coronavirus Resource Centre. It's reporting that the US has now overtaken China with over 82,000 confirmed cases. This means the US has more confirmed cases than any other country. And more than 3 million people in the United States filed for unemployment benefits last week, smashing previous records. The figure is much higher than expected and doesn't include the self-employed. In a rare television interview with NBC, the chairman of the US Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, said the US may already be in a recession, but he sounded hopeful that the economy would recover.
We may well be in a recession, but I would point to the difference between this and a normal recession. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with our economy. Quite the contrary. The economy performed very well right through February. We've got 50-year low in unemployment for the last couple of years. So we start in a very strong position. This isn't something that's wrong with the economy. This is a situation where people are being asked to step back from economic activity, close their businesses, stay home from work. So in principle, if we get the virus spread under control fairly quickly, then economic activity can resume. And we want to make that rebound as vigorous as possible.
The chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell. In the few months since the outbreak began, scientists have rushed to investigate every aspect of it. But there's a great deal that's still unknown, including some very basic facts, like how far the pandemic could spread. Our science editor, David Shookman, reports on what we don't know about the virus.
Protective gloves, the first step in researching the virus. In labs all over the world, a huge amount has been discovered about this strange new threat. But so many questions remain. First, what if you have the virus but don't show any symptoms, or only very mild ones? Can you still spread the disease? Dr. Natalie McDermott is a clinical lecturer at King's College London.
Just yawning can express some droplets, even if you're not symptomatic.
Generally, children don't seem too badly affected by the virus. But no one has yet managed to work out how much they're spreading it. Dr. McDermott again.
Little children are very good vectors of infection. Even if they're not particularly unwell, they do shed the virus a lot. It might have to do with having an immature immune system. Partly it's also due to children not necessarily having the same etiquette as adults when it comes to coughing and sneezing.
In China, people venture out as restrictions are lifted. And this woman sounds cautiously pleased. Before, this was serious, she says, and we were afraid to go out. But all this raises a difficult issue. If you've had the virus, can you catch it again? Do you build up immunity? Scientists have confirmed that in patients that recover, antibodies have been provoked into action. But does this resistance to the infection last? Professor Jonathan Ball is a virologist at the University of Nottingham in the UK.
If somebody becomes infected with the coronavirus and then they recover and become well, we know that it's the immune system that was responsible for that. A key question, though, is how long that immunity will last in those individuals. There's no reason to suspect that it would be short-lived, but until we do the studies, until we detect antibodies and measure antibodies in recovered individuals, we won't know for sure.
Empty streets in Italy. Marco Considi, a journalist, looks out of his window.
There are a few people around, not all wearing masks, but anyway, most of them walking alone just for a walk. Maybe they go to the grocery store. We have to adapt to another way of life. We have to adapt not to shake hands. We have to adapt not to hug and kiss people, and it's very hard for us. We are Italians, you know that.
And as the outbreak escalates, there's yet another mystery. In Italy, of all the people who've died of the virus so far, about 70% are men. In China, the fatality rate among women is 1.7%, while for men, it's 2.8%. And Professor Ball says no one really knows why.
It's been a consistent theme that more men than women are dying of coronavirus infection. It could be to do with lifestyle, for example, smoking, which can impact on the lungs and the general health. But in truth, it remains a mystery.
More men than women are smokers in China, but in Italy, rates of smoking are about the same. Another possible explanation is that the immune system in older women can be more effective. Along with so much else, there's a rush to find out.
David Shookman. $5 trillion. That's how much the leaders of the world's most wealthy nations, the G20, say they're injecting into the global economy to deal with the coronavirus. It came during a virtual summit hosted by Saudi Arabia. Theo Leggett is our international business correspondent.
$5 trillion does reflect what's already been done to a large extent. What the G20 was under pressure to do, though, was to show that these countries are talking from the same song sheet, that they're not just concerned with their own affairs, that they're working together to address what is, by definition, a global problem, so that the load is shared and so that people are doing the same kind of things. The statement we got out of the G20, it was long on rhetoric, rather short on detail, as these things tend to be.
Yeah, absolutely. The G20, the wealthy nations of the world, they also talked about developing nations and how to boost access to medical supplies there and testing kits. After the summit, the head of economic affairs in China's foreign ministry, Wang Xiaolong, spoke, and he was saying what form that aid should take.
China also supported the role of international organisations in this regard, and particularly we support scaling up of support for the WHO and other relevant organisations.
So, Theo, translating words like that, rhetoric like that, into action doesn't always happen, and it does need to happen extremely quickly. What's your feeling about how things will move?
Well, I think this is being taken seriously. If you look at the statement that came out of the G20, they said, we're gravely concerned with the serious risks posed to all countries, particularly developing and least developed countries, where health systems and economies may be less able to cope with the challenge. And that's where organisations like the World Bank and the IMF come in. And the question is whether there's enough connectedness, enough commitment between them to do this together, and how long they take getting these plans into action.
Theo, if we can, let's go back to the situation in the United States specifically. More than 3 million people filing for unemployment benefits last week. But the US Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin described all these jobless records as not relevant. He said, look, these workers are going to be ultimately rehired. Now, is he right, or has there been such a shock to the system that things may well not get back to normal?
Well, I think he's taking a very, very, very optimistic view there. The point is, he's looking at this as workers who are laid off because of a crisis. Once the crisis is over, companies will be back up and running and they'll take those workers back on. The question is whether the companies themselves will still be there after the crisis, because you do have these swathes of businesses in the services sector which are making no money at the moment. And I think it's fair to say that the recovery from this is unlikely to be swift.
Theo Leggett there. A ban on all international flights in and out of Russia has just come into effect. Further initiatives have already been announced, with all shops in the capital, Moscow, excluding food retailers and chemists, due to shut from Saturday. From there, Sarah Rainsford sent this report.
There are now no regular or charter flights in or out of Russia. The foreign ministry here has been urging anyone still overseas to get in touch and get on a list to be repatriated. The numbers run into the tens of thousands, with some stranded in countries that have already closed their borders. International rail and sea routes to and from Russia are also closed, and foreigners were stopped from entering the country a week ago.
Sarah Rainsford in Russia. Don't go out to exercise, only leave your homes to buy essential food supplies. That's what South Africa's almost 60 million citizens have just been told. Since midnight local time, the country is in lockdown, and it's going to last at least 3 weeks. Police and the army are being deployed to enforce the new rules, and the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, warned people who try to violate the lockdown that they will meet the full might of the law. Here are the views of some people in the hours before the shutdown.
I don't have money, like now I'm thinking, what should I do? Because I will be stuck in the house with my babies and my wife, like, or some they are pregnant, what gonna do?
I'm going to starve to death. There's no way I can stay at home for 21 days without work. We are going to get sick in the mind.
Well, our correspondent in Johannesburg, Andrew Harding, told me more about the scope of these new rules.
The president and his ministers insisting that there will be prison sentences and heavy fines for anybody who violates the terms of this very tough clampdown for the next 3 weeks. So the country's borders closed. You can move from one province to another. All schools already closed. People must stay in their homes except to go out to shop. And, of course, other essential workers can carry on working and travelling. But the vast majority of people must stay. So they've, for instance, banned alcohol sales because there's a particular concern that people could get violent, they could have accidents and take up valuable hospital beds. People have been banned even from walking their dogs or exercising outside their homes.
Meanwhile, Andrew, we're hearing in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kinshasa, the capital of that country, 12 million people or so with very, very large slums, is going to be put into a 4 days on, 2 days off lockdown. The concern there, I imagine, is that in a city like that, whilst there are very, very small numbers of people infected so far, it could spread very quickly.
Exactly. The DRC there, like Kenya, Rwanda, all these countries across Africa, which have been watching first what's gone on in Asia and then in Europe and now in South Africa, and decided, look, the only way for us to stand a chance against this virus is to use the grace period that this continent has been given, these extra few weeks to prepare, and to try and act earlier than most other countries, to try and do these shutdowns. As we're seeing here in South Africa, no one has died yet here of the virus, and yet we're having these incredibly economically damaging interventions now. The same now is being attempted in other countries, and the problem, I think, for so much of Africa is going to be enforcement, because, as you mentioned there in Kinshasa, very poor communities, people living five, six, seven to a single room often, and it is going to be very difficult for societies, for communities, to do the basics of hygiene, of self-isolation, which, of course, are essential for trying to prevent this pandemic from spreading across the continent.
Andrew Harding in South Africa. It's widely believed that the new coronavirus started as a result of the practice in parts of China of eating wild animals. Although it's unclear which animal transferred the virus, bats, snakes and pangolins have all been suggested. It's believed to have originated from a wildlife market in the city of Wuhan. China is now taking measures to control that illegal industry. On Wednesday, local authorities launched a mobile app for whistleblowers to report wildlife crimes. Our China media analyst, Kerry Allen, told me more about this app.
People can download it in eastern Zhejiang province. And one thing I should say is that it's probably going to be rolled out nationally. But what it means is that people can, if they see any illegal animal trade or any wild animal trade, they can report it anonymously. And this will alert the local police and they can put a stop to this.
So how widespread is this trade, this illegal trade in wild animals?
It's extremely widespread, and it's a real problem for China because there's a long-term belief that a lot of wild animals can be used in traditional Chinese medicine and they can cure certain ailments. So it's very lucrative.
So how likely is it, do you think, that people will use this app? Will people see it as good public-spiritedness or will perhaps some others see it as snooping for the government? What do you think?
Oh, yeah, people are definitely going to download this app. Ever since there was this question of COVID-19 starting from bats, one of the things that happened was official government media were putting out lots of posters and telling people not to buy wild animals. If they saw wild animals, to report them to the police, if they saw them being sold. So people were so scared because they've spent 2 months very much in self-quarantine in their houses and they don't want to see this again.
And Carrie, I gather you've also been looking at a lovely story about two married medics and their protective suits.
Yeah, there's been a lot of stories about the people on the front line in China in recent weeks, especially as a lot of them are now leaving hotels where they've been staying so that they don't potentially pass on the virus to their families and reuniting. And this is a lovely story in Shaoxing, a city in eastern Zhejiang province, where a couple went viral last month because they were captured on surveillance footage recognizing each other because they were both dressed in hazmat suits and they didn't initially recognize each other. They only heard each other's voices. And then what happened was, they've been on the front line, they've been working for months, and the wife had to spend a certain period of time in quarantine. And yesterday was the first day that she came out of hospital, and there was footage captured of her son in tears running across the street and her husband also because they'd not seen her in 50 days.
That was Kerry Allen. Now, here's Jackie Leonard with a request.
About a month ago, we put together a special edition of the Global News podcast answering your questions on the coronavirus. Well, as you will be very well aware, the story is continuing to develop and has changed. So if you have any new questions, just send them to us and we will again try to find answers for you. Send a recording of your question telling us who and where you are to globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. Thank you.
And please get your questions to us by Sunday the 29th of March. More than 55,000 people infected, around 27,000 people are being treated in hospital. The figures coming out of Spain continue to shock. Hospitals and nursing homes are in danger of being overwhelmed. On Thursday, the Spanish king, Felipe, visited a giant makeshift military hospital in a Madrid conference centre where some 5,500 hospital beds, including intensive care units, have been set up. For a sense, though, of what it's like behind all these numbers, my colleague Pascal Harter spoke to Dr. Ana Jimenez, an emergency doctor at a hospital in the Spanish capital.
I feel exhausted because I am so scared. Scared about doing the things in the right way. Scared about transmitting the infection to my family, to my colleagues. And when I am resting, for example, at night, I woke up with a nightmare. It's not physical tiredness. Overall, psychological tiredness.
And Dr. Jimenez, are you worried about contracting the coronavirus yourself?
I think I have had it because a couple of weeks ago I had kind of flu. But as in Spain, we don't have enough tests. We are not doing tests for people with small symptoms. And so really I'm not scared about having it. But our families are dying around us. There are a lot of people dying.
Is there a danger that while you had these mild symptoms, you were going to work, you were treating patients, and you could have passed on the coronavirus?
We are not doing the tests to our doctors, to our nurses, to our workers. We are not doing the tests to people with mild symptoms. We really don't know right now the real photograph of the epidemic in Spain now. We have been asking about the tests for the last 2 weeks. When this exploded, we said we need waterproof coats, tests, we need medicines. They did nothing. They are doing the things always late, always bad. And that's the reason that our system, the supposed to be one of the most important, one of the best systems in the world, now it's one of the worst because without enough treatments, without enough tests, it's impossible to control an epidemic.
That was Dr. Ana Jimenez, an emergency doctor at a hospital in Madrid. Now to Italy, and there seems to be some good news. There are starting to be some signs that the nationwide lockdown is having a positive effect, with the rate of new infections slowing down a bit. But it's still by far the country worst hit by the virus, with deaths now of more than 7,500. Our Italy correspondent Mark Lowen reports.
From the streets of Italy, they're sending up eyes in the sky, police drones to watch for anybody breaking limits on movement, using every method to stop the flow of people and the virus. The authorities have already hiked fines for violating the restrictions. It's a desperate attempt to flatten the curve of new infections. The need is to ease the pressure on hospitals. In the northern region of Lombardy, there are no spare intensive care beds. 30 doctors have died. Even in Rome, cases are rising fast. Another hospital, Casa Palocco, now opening a coronavirus wing. Antonino Marchese is the medical director there.
The Italian health system in the north is at a very critical point. In Rome, we've been able to learn from what they've experienced. For my part, I need to show all the courage I can, because we have to fight with all our strength. We don't know when the peak will be. Maybe in Rome, this weekend.
The worst hit town remains Bergamo, near Milan. Its mayor, Giorgio Gori, says the Italian restrictions should be the model elsewhere, with a warning to those who delay.
A lockdown is the right decision, and it's the one most European countries are taking. Sadly, it's late. Other countries had an advantage of a few days over Italy. In the UK's case, it was 2 weeks. Britain lost precious time, and there is a risk that it will cost too many lives. Losing those days could be a serious mistake.
In Parliament, where MPs sat far apart, many in masks, there was applause for the Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte as he spoke of Italy's agony.
These are terrible days for our nation. Every day we are forced to record new deaths. It is a pain for us losing the most fragile, the vulnerable. A pain that is constantly happening. We would never have thought that in our country, in these days, we would have watched long convoys of military trucks carrying the coffins of our fellow citizens.
There are now signs the restrictions are beginning to work. Latest figures show for the fourth day a slower increase in the total number of people infected here. But hundreds are still dying every day, and this drained country is yearning to reach a turning point.
Mark Lowen in Italy. COVID-19 has shown its power to overwhelm well-funded healthcare systems in the richest countries. How much greater the risk then when those medical services are weak to begin with and where people are packed into spaces in which calls for social distancing or self-isolation are all but futile? In Gaza, 2 million Palestinians are crammed in under the governance of the Hamas group. Matthias Schmale is the Gaza Operations Director for UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. He spoke to my colleague Tim Franks.
Overnight, another 7 cases were announced, bringing the total to 9.
Right. And do you know where these infections originated from?
The official line from the Ministry of Health is that the original 2 cases came in from outside. They were 2 Palestinians who'd been in Pakistan and then were put into quarantine. And the latest 7 announced last night are guards, security people at this quarantine. So, you know, it's a bit of a borderline because they didn't travel, but they contracted it from these other 2 inside the quarantine area.
Right. And I guess that's particularly concerning is once you get into local transmission.
I've been saying now for several days we need to treat this as if it is a full outbreak. You know, we don't have the luxury to speculate. And so as UN, we are working as if there is a full outbreak locally.
Well, you say you need to treat it as if it's a full outbreak. Gaza has particular challenges, to put it euphemistically. How difficult is it to try and contain this virus for you?
The biggest challenge really is that it is so overcrowded and that standards of living, particularly in the refugee camps, 1.4 million people in Gaza of the 2 million living here are refugees, many of whom live in overcrowded camps. So it's very common to have 6, 8, or even 10 people living in a room or two. And so to do social distancing in those kinds of circumstances or isolation when once that becomes necessary is almost impossible to imagine.
That was Matthias Schmale, the Gaza Operations Director of UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. An issue that's been troubling authorities around the world is what to do about prisons and the inmates that live in them. There have been large coronavirus outbreaks in some jails, riots in others, and some countries have decided to release thousands of people early. Charlotte Gallagher reports.
A relative of a prisoner held in one of Colombia's largest jails demonstrates after 23 inmates were killed in rioting. The violence was sparked by a protest about overcrowding and poor health services during the coronavirus outbreak. There's been similar unrest in prisons in Italy, where a number of people also managed to escape. While many of us are trying to social distance, prisoners and their guards don't have that luxury. In overcrowded jails, you don't have a hope of keeping your distance from others. China has seen hundreds of infections in prisons, and Iran has also reported cases among inmates. Some countries are now releasing prisoners and ordering them to go home and isolate. Iran has temporarily freed around 85,000, and Ethiopia has sent home 4,000. Germany, Canada and the US have also taken similar measures with low-risk offenders. The US, which jails more people than any other country, is seeing the virus spread through its prison system. Four guards and six inmates, including the sex offender and former Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein, have tested positive. Organisations like Amnesty International are now calling on countries like Egypt and Syria, where jail conditions are cramped and unhygienic, to release prisoners immediately.
Charlotte Gallagher. On Thursday evening here in the UK, people stepped out of their homes, got onto their balconies or leaned out of their windows to clap for people working in Britain's National Health Service, or NHS, during this pandemic. Similar events have happened in other countries like China, Turkey and Argentina. Our correspondent David Sillitoe sent this report from North London.
Well, it is amazing. Everyone on this street is out tonight. And just a few conversations reveals, well, how many people are seriously ill in isolation, how many people are worried, but also how many helpers there are and how it's brought this street together. We've got doctors, we've got NHS workers. We even have, just two doors down from her, here, a lady named Scully. You're a virologist. I'll stand this far away from you. Yes. It must have been a busy time for you recently.
I don't think ever again virologists have been that busy before.
What have you been doing then? How's it?
So I'm just back from work, and it's so absolutely wonderful to have this reception when I'm back. We've been working very, very hard, making sure our staff and our patients are safe. I have a wonderful team of doctors and colleagues around me, our infection control nurses, our occupational health, trying to look after our patients and our staff in this very, very difficult time.
A report by David Sillitoe in North London. And now to other news. The Israeli opposition leader Benny Gantz has been elected as Speaker of Parliament after unexpectedly put himself forward for the job. He said the move, which keeps Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in office for now, was needed to handle the coronavirus outbreak. Tom Bateman reports from Jerusalem.
Benny Gantz's alliance was forged as the anti-Netanyahu party, pledging they would never sit in a government with a prime minister facing criminal charges, as Mr. Netanyahu does. But after a year-long political crisis and three elections, Mr. Gantz's bloc has fallen apart. Mr. Gantz, without a clear path to a coalition on his own terms and under pressure due to the coronavirus outbreak, nominated himself and was elected Speaker of the Knesset, gaining the backing of a majority of MPs after pledging to join an emergency so-called unity government.
Tom Bateman. The United States has charged the Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and senior members of his government with international drug trafficking. Washington has offered a $15 million reward for information leading to his arrest. Our South America correspondent Katie Watson has more.
According to the US Department of Justice, the Maduro administration wants to flood the United States with cocaine and uses the drug as a weapon. Mr. Maduro is accused of allowing people connected to the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, known as the FARC guerrilla group, to use its airspace to enable cocaine to be flown to the United States. These charges will undoubtedly increase tensions between the two countries. The US, which backs opposition leader Juan Guaido as president, has repeatedly accused Nicolas Maduro of leading a corrupt and brutal regime.
Katie Watson. And that's all from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Nick Miles, and until next time, goodbye.
Capital One has a fresh take on banking. Now you can open a new savings account in about 5 minutes and earn 5 times the national average. Banking with Capital One means 5 times the savings toward your dream honeymoon, or 5 times the savings toward your family's ultimate vacation, even 5 times the savings toward just feeling good about saving. It's time to make your savings goals come true. This is Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A. member FDIC.